Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm very pleased you've joined me for another Listen to Older Voices program. This week, part two, the final part of the life and times of 70-year-old Rod Young. Last week, we learned that Rod enjoyed a good childhood despite wartime rationing. He had a brief flirtation as a player with the then VFL team Collingwood and did a building apprenticeship with his father, which led him to a career in drafting. This week is packed with stories, including his marriage to Helen, his move to Western Australia, his becoming a state and later national swimming referee, a member of the Board of Control of the West Australian Swimming Association, a member of the WA Cliff Rescue Unit, a controller with the SES, and during all this, he gains his private pilot's licence and takes a job in Burma, and believe it or not, there's more. But for now, we pick up with Rod finishing his story about getting his first car and driver's licence. What about your first car? What was it and when did you get it?
It was an FX Holden, a 1949. I think it was.
A sturdy vehicle.
Yeah, the original model with the vertical grille, had the vinyl upholstering, and I was an idiot driver. Took risks, which a lot of the local teenagers do nowadays. How I didn't kill myself, I'll never know. I had a blowout on retread tyres on the front, and which nearly rolled the vehicle. And I had a roof rack on the car. And I lost all my case and all my bedding and everything else off the roof, ended up in a property somewhere alongside the road. Anyway, it was all sorted out. Yeah, quite interesting.
How old were you then when you got your first vehicle?
Would have been about 20. Oh. And I was, you know, seeing a couple of ladies, and of course I had to take the bus and the...
Not very convenient.
The rail and everything, because I had to travel from Bunbury to Kew and out to Bourne. And
now, talking about girls...
Yep.
I'm sure, like most young men, you had many girlfriends, but you married a young lady called Helen. How did you meet her?
How did I meet her? I met her water skiing down at Moe or Moore, can't remember now. It was a long weekend. I was invited along, so I went down there, and that's how I met her. I did some water skiing with a couple of other guys that I knew that had the boat, and away we went.
When you first saw her, was it an issue of... Wow, this is a good sort. This is somebody I'd like to be with for a while. Or did it grow over a period of time?
No, it grew over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And where did she live?
She was a nurse at Mercy Hospital, I think it was. And, of course, schedule of duty times, she was pretty restricted as far as when she could get time off and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was pretty frustrating, I suppose, if you like to put it that way. I probably... Well, I'll be quite blunt. Within 8 months, I was engaged, and that was in June, and I think in the following January, I got married in Western Australia. So,
her parents were in Western Australia, or why? Why was it Western Australia?
No, only her mother and the rest of her family. So,
okay, yeah.
Father was deceased.
Did you have children?
Had three children. The first one was a girl, and then followed by two boys, which are up here, and I've got currently five grandchildren, including a new granddaughter, the first of the granddaughters.
How wonderful.
Plus a grandson and the daughters, granddaughters in Darwin, my youngest son.
All right, let's get back to your work. You mentioned that you worked your way through the different levels of draftsmanship.
Yep.
And you eventually became manager.
Manager of an architectural office.
Yeah. Roughly what year was this? Are we talking 60s?
Late 60s? No, it would have been about 72, 73.
Right. Going to WA, was that because you married Helen and she was there, so you moved over there lock, stock and barrel?
Yeah, it was a big move.
Yes.
It's the biggest thing that's happened in my life.
Yes.
Other than getting married.
Other than getting married, yes. So you go over to WA with Helen, you get married, you move lock, stock and barrel. It's a very big move for you. And you pick up your career there in drafting, is that correct?
Prior to leaving Melbourne, I got a duodenal ulcer, so I thought, well, why should I be working for somebody else getting a duodenum ulcer and I'll work for myself? So I ended up settling into the community over there and opened my own business. I originally operated from home for about the first 6 months. It was late 75, and from there I was able to get a property and I operated the business as a building design consultancy for 14 years.
Oh, that wasn't a bad effort.
So
yeah, it was pretty successful then.
Yeah, in which I bought, sold, renovated, upgraded, I think about five different houses or something like that while I was there. Again, doing a lot of the work myself. Yeah, I became involved with the local community.
You became a swimming referee. How did this come about and what did that actually involve?
Oh, my children all swam. And, of course, I had to buy a Mitsubishi van to travel all over Western Australia, particularly Karratha and Port Hedland and up that way.
Well, this is because of the kids swimming?
Yeah, yeah, competitively.
Oh, so they were in competitive swimming, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My daughter was under 12's backstroke champion for WA. So, yeah, it was a pretty full-on sort of involvement, you know. And looking at the Olympics now, just completed, the amount of time parents spend running their children around, you know, to the training sessions and that sort of thing. I ended up as president of the Bunbury Swimming Club and then ended up as president of the Country Swimming Association and ended up on the board of control at Western Australian Swimming Association. Became a national referee and took a couple of teams away to championships, one in Canberra and one in up north in Geraldton. So yeah, it was fairly heavily involved.
It's obviously something you enjoyed doing though.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I enjoyed the achievement, personal achievement, because you work pretty hard. I mean, you've got to go through, as a referee, a top referee, you've got to go through about seven different phases of swimming and you've got to know it back to front, so
yes.
You know, it's not in fact I was the official starter for the championships in WA, which was Beattie Park at that stage. I don't know whether it's still going now. Being on the board, I thought, oh well, I'm going on a trip to Thailand, and they had to change their starting pistols and you've got no idea the rigmarole that I had to go through to get approval from the board and then produce this at the airports and getting the firearms back. And
so you had to take your starting pistols with you, did you?
No. I had to get new ones.
You had to get new ones over there? Right.
In Thailand, yeah.
Ah, getting them back.
Yeah, getting would
have been interesting.
That's getting them out of the country from Bangkok and also back into Perth was quite a... In fact, I had to leave the pistols there for about 2 to 3 weeks while they were all tested and everything else. But anyway.
Was that your first trip to Asia when you were in Bangkok then?
No. I'd been there a few times. I've done a lot of travelling in Southeast Asia and worked over there as well, yeah.
Do you like travelling?
Used to, I don't now.
Okay. When you going back into the 70s and 80s, travelling was an exciting thing for you?
Yeah, the company was good. In fact, we took the whole family on a couple of trips, one to Bali and one to Kuala Lumpur. So, yeah, it was quite exciting and it was great for the kids. They got a chance to meet the locals and particularly in Bali, go and do some surfing and that sort of thing with the boys, yeah.
I'm a traveling man and I made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl. I've a pretty señorita waiting for me down in old Mexico, and if you're ever in Alaska, stop and see my cute little Eskimo. My sweet Fraulein down in Berlin town makes my heart start to yearn, and my China doll down in old Hong Kong waits for my return. through the night. When we walk in the sands of Waikiki and I held you oh so tight. Sweet Fräulein down in Berlin town makes my heart start to yearn, and my China doll down in old Hong Kong waits for my return. Pretty Polynesian baby over the sea, I remember the night when we walked in the sand of Waikiki and I held you oh so tight.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, Turning Back Time. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Rod Young.
Now, around the mid-80s,
yeah,
you were involved in the West Australian Cliff Rescue Unit. Now, this is so far away from swimming and architecture and building. Oh. How did you get involved in that?
Well, I was reasonably fit at that stage, not so much now. I met up with a sergeant who was with SAS in Claremont in Perth, and he was in Rainey or Mechanical Engineers.
Hmm.
But he was also an instructor in roping techniques and all rescue type work. And I went and did about three courses with the group, and ended up, they were looking at particularly Margaret River area with the caving cliffs down that way, and they wanted to have a secondary sort of level where, in a response by the police for assistance, they could have somebody on the scene pretty quickly before they could get there.
Mm.
So, yeah, I became an abseiling instructor and spent probably 3 years. In fact, my daughter was also a member of the unit. We had three members in Bunbury, which was south of Perth, about 200 south of Perth.
Were you ever involved in any rescues?
Simulated, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that there weren't any real ones.
Thankfully, no.
That's right.
Because it can be quite devastating, actually, depending on what you find. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
What else have I done? Well, I got a private pilot's license. I learned to fly.
How old were you, or what year was this?
Oh, this was around the when I was involved in scouting, actually. Would have been 1979-80.
Okay, so it's around about the same time as you were a swimming referee, around that
yeah,
period.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I used to combine all those bits and pieces.
I mean, I could ask you another. In fact, I will ask you another question. Then we'll come back to this pilot. Well, how did you find time for all this? I mean, you've got
to run a business.
You're running a business. You're a swimming referee. Your pilot's license. How did you find the time?
Well, I was involved with the State Emergency Service as a controller there for a while, for 5 years. Ex-president of Rotary. Yeah, I'm vice president of the local football club. Yeah, it was pretty demanding.
Are you the man that invented the 26-hour day, are you?
It was pretty demanding. Pretty
I bet
demanding.
It was.
Yeah.
But the pilot's license bits intrigues me. Why did you do that? Because it was a challenge, or was there a reason?
Okay, I picked up a client in a place called Esperance, which is right down on the south coast of WA, and who wanted to extend his motel that he owned. And I drove down, it took me 8 hours down, 8 hours back, plus an overnight stay, which was time-consuming. And I thought, this is crazy, because he had to go through Lake Grace and, anyway, all the way down there, Ravensthorpe and so forth. So I thought, this is crazy. So I think somebody said, oh, have you been up flying? So I thought, oh, well, I'll try this. So I went up and sat as a passenger in the co-pilot's seat, if you like, and I was taken for a couple of circuits around the area. And, well, what do you think? Oh, well, yeah, it sounds interesting. Depends on what's going to cost, because it's always money involved. But anyway, I ended up getting the licence, and I ended up flying down to Esperance to do the inspections, down in an hour 40 minutes and back in an hour 40 minutes, and I didn't have to stay overnight.
Yes, that's right.
So it was good.
Yes. Yeah. How long did you keep your pilot's licence active for?
Right up until I went to overseas working for a construction company, so I had to relinquish it then.
Is this sometime in the 90s, is it?
Yeah, that was in 1991.
Okay. What job was this and where did you go?
I joined a company in 89, construction company, a very large one actually. Head office was in Perth. And I ended up, at that stage, I was single, and I was able to become very flexible as far as where the company decided to place me. I started in Perth for a period of time, and then I went to Homebush to set up all the earthworks for the stadium at Homebush. From there, I went to Darwin for 12 months, completing the Supreme Court premises and starting the Parliament House. And after a crane accident in Darwin on the Parliament House site, they transferred me back to Perth for about 3 weeks R&R.
Were you injured in that?
No, I wasn't, but two people were killed on the putting up a crane, so...
Yeah, it was still distressing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had counselling and all this sort of thing. And it was interesting because when the accident occurred, nobody wanted to take responsibility. And with my state emergency service training, I ended up locking down the whole of the site until the police arrived. So
that certainly paid off.
Yeah, training, just background training. And I had, you know, older people ahead of me that with more authority, but they just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting.
Yeah.
So from there, after I came back to Perth for the 3 odd weeks, they said, how would you like to go to Burma? So I said, Burma? Where's Burma? Well, it's next to Thailand. So I ended up in Burma for 2 years rebuilding the Strand Hotel, which was built by the Brits in 1901.
Was that a challenge?
Oh, yeah. Big challenge. Probably the biggest, one of the biggest challenges in my life.
What was it about it that was so challenging?
The military control, security, everything else.
Right, so it's not the building per se, but the environment in which it's happening.
Yeah, well, I was selected. Three of us went from Perth office, and one was a site engineer, the other one was a project manager, and myself as administration manager, come senior supervisor, whatever you want to call it. It was only because of my background in architecture and everything else, because it being a historic building, there were a lot of things that had to be made, decisions made on the spot.
Yes.
Even though the architects were based in Hong Kong. So, yeah, it was certainly an experience. how can I put it? The social life was pretty restricted. There are 5 or 6 embassies there, which being a member of the Australian embassy, which incidentally had the only squash court in Burma, had its Olympic swimming pool and everything else and a club. And that gave you the insight into being an honorary member of the Italian, German, British, French embassies. So it was quite good. So the social life wasn't too bad.
What about the Burmese people? How did you find them?
Beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. It's a country that's 30 years at least behind the Western world in technology, although the military junta tend to control everything as far as technology is concerned. They won't let it loose on the local population, which is a great shame.
Yes.
To the point, they've got all the equipment, everything else there, but they wouldn't release it, even though we were working for the Ministry of Tourism with the Strand, they wouldn't release any of the equipment. So it cost them $28,000 to bring in gear to be able to demonstrate and use on the project.
That must have been ultimately frustrating for you.
Oh yeah, very frustrating. I spent quite a lot of time, because there were a lot of subcontract trades that couldn't be done in Burma. So we had to employ people from places like Singapore and Hong Kong to come in and do certain sections of the work for us. The very interesting part about the whole thing was that the three guys that went from Western Australia could carry out and demonstrate every trade that was required.
Goodness.
From concreting through to formwork, through to plastering, through to carpentering, through to tiling.
But that's quite amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's why we were selected.
Selected so. To be able to do that, yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So it was quite an experience.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
The job finished okay?
Oh, well, I don't know. I only spent 2 years there. The job went on for another 12 months. So, yes, it's apparently been concluded. I must tell you, while I was there in the early part, there was a curfew on by the military because I can't think of her name now.
He was the ruler?
No, she was the one.
Oh, the woman that's still in captivity.
I better
yes.
give you a quick overlay. When the Japanese left Burma, they left the country in quite a state. They ended up getting advice from the Americans as far as setting up a democratic situation. They had an election, and Aung Shee, okay? Now, Aung Shee's father was the father of Burma's new Burma, if you like to put it that way, after the Japanese moved out. And he and eight of his colleagues were assassinated by the military in the parliament buildings in 1948. So the whole country was in disarray. The military took over and everything else. And then they decided to have an election, which took place in 87 or 88, 1988. And Aung Shee won the election completely, overran the military, but the military wouldn't let her have control. So they assumed control and they put her under house arrest from there.
And it's been like that ever since.
And she's had times when she has been able to get out. But yeah, she was married to a professor at Oxford University or Cambridge University, I think. She has two boys. The husband has since passed on, but she is a delightful lady. In fact, I used to drive past her house arrest place every day, and there was pillboxes.
You were saying there are pillboxes everywhere.
Yeah, armed guards and, shocking situation. But she's a lovely lady. I met her on one occasion, actually, at a political function, which I shouldn't have been at, but I sort of crept in, and I was introduced to her. But, yeah, she's a delightful lady. She would be probably in her 70s now, early 70s. Mm. And it's just a shocking shame because there's such a quiet, interested people that live there, always trying to please you. They are the greatest people for copying things, like carvings and all this sort of thing.
Well, it obviously brings back many fond memories, right? Yeah. Because the smile on your face is from ear to ear.
Yeah.
Our time is almost up. We've covered a lot of ground, and you can't cover somebody's life, of course, in an hour, but you've led a very interesting life. You've led a very full life. You've experienced probably a lot of highs and probably, like all of us, some lows.
Mm.
Now, being a human being, one day you will pass on, as we all do, and hopefully that's many years to come yet. But when that time does come, how would you like to be remembered?
I'm a simple person. I am now. I'm certainly a lot more relaxed than what I used to be because I was working under stress.
Mm.
I just want to be remembered as a simple person who has got a loving family, and I don't want anything fancy as far as, you know, burials or anything like that. I'm just not that sort of person. I live a very simple life, and I have two pets, and they keep me occupied. And as far as a car's concerned, I'm getting rid of the car. That's gone or going. And I'm going to get myself a little motorised buggy.
Good for
electric
you.
Buggy.
Good for you.
To run round in, because public transport here in Healesville, Victoria, is extremely good. And if I need to, all I need to do is jump a bus and go down to the train and go elsewhere if I need to.
Or and get running picked a car up. These days is so expensive.
Oh, insurance, fuel, registration, you name it, you know, and maintenance more than anything else, because I've got a vehicle that's, or had a vehicle that was 23 years old, so nearly as old as me.
One final question. Has it been a good life?
I think so. I don't think I'd do anything different. I think I'd do exactly the same thing. I just follow my instincts and play it all by ear. Certainly, I've done a lot of things that probably I would not do again, but in principle, I'd say the way I've gone. We'll just see how we go.
Rod, thank you very much for sharing some of your life with us.
That's all right. Thank you.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.